This podcast was recorded Thursday, June 6th at 10:38 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Like Governor DeWine will order lawmakers back to Columbus for another special session because the session he ordered a week ago was so productive. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who pass laws only when shamed into doing so. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up on the podcast, President Biden tacks to the right and earns our Snollygoster of the Week award. But first, speaking of that very productive special legislative session, Governor DeWine ordered the Ohio House and Senate back into session to pass a measure they have easily passed twice before. He wanted them to extend the campaign filing deadline so President Biden's name would appear on the Ohio ballot in November. The old deadline was 12 days before the Democratic convention, so Biden's nomination would have come too late. And to some mild surprise, both the House and the Senate voted to extend the deadline, so those Ohioans who want to can vote for Joe Biden in this year's presidential election. But there was a catch. Republican lawmakers only passed the bill because it was tied to another bill that makes changes to rules for issues campaigns in Ohio. You know, those issues campaigns that put abortion rights in the Constitution, that legalized recreational marijuana, and might make political gerrymandering illegal. The law passed by the legislature and signed by the governor makes foreign contributions to issues campaigns illegal. The co-sponsor of the bill, Ohio Senator Rob McCauley of Northwest Ohio, says the bill closes a loophole.
We said, look, we don't want foreigners using these dark money groups as pass-throughs. We don't want foreigners trying to influence our elections. And so we sought to close a loophole that is in Ohio law and federal law, quite frankly, that where it's already illegal to contribute in candidate elections for these foreigners, but not for issues elections.
But Democrats complain the foreign donations ban is not the real motivation behind the new law. House Minority Leader Allison Russo of suburban Columbus.
In fact, if it had been just a very straightforward bill that had reiterated what the federal law is, all Democrats, and myself included, would have voted for that. But that is not, in fact, what this bill does. This bill goes much further than that and has a number of issues.
And Governor DeWine predicts the law, like many recently passed laws, will end up before a judge.
Whether it will be effective, I don't think anybody knows, because we don't know what courts will do. Any kind of controversial bill that's passed, or even partially controversial, ends up in court.
Joining us now to discuss this law, its constitutionality, and possibly unintended, or maybe intended, consequences, is Case Western Reserve University law professor Atiba Ellis. Professor Ellis, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, federal law already bans foreign contributions to campaigns. State law prohibits foreign donations to candidates. Does Ohio really need this law to ban foreign contributions to issues campaigns?
I'm not sure it does. I mean, it, as you just said it in the lead up here, you know, foreign contributions to campaigns are pretty clearly banned, definitely banned in terms of contributions to candidates running for office. And my sense of the law is that this has been taken generally as a ban regarding elections generally. And so we tend to have pretty deep skepticism about foreign persons, either directly or indirectly, making contributions in the political marketplace. Mm-hmm. This law wants to do the expressive work of ratcheting up these rules. And, you know, I'll take the argument as given that there are those who might perceive a loophole here, but the practice has been treated as not appropriate for American elections. And so it seems to me that this law is doing more work than simply just closing a legal loophole. I mean, one of my concerns here is that this is changing the scope of campaign finance in Ohio in a special section that is moving at lightning quick speed. And, you know, as you said, there may be consequences, intended and unintended, by ratcheting the rules in an aggressive way that has very little hearing or opportunity for conversation, input, or discussion.
Yeah, this did come in at sort of the last minute as they were discussing this fairly routine effort in the past of changing the deadline so that it meets the major parties' conventions. But supporters of banning foreign contributions to issues campaign, they point to what happened, what they believe happened in this past summer that when the abortion rights bill, the campaign was going on. Swiss billionaire Hans-Georg Weiss donated to political action committees involved in the abortion rights amendment. He is from Switzerland. He is part of this group, the 1630 Fund. He received from him $200 million from this Swiss billionaire, according to the Associated Press. But we don't know. There's no traceable direct link between his donations and the Ohio campaign. You know, it's like all these sort of political action committees. It's kind of arm's length. Is there a point, though, when a Swiss billionaire comes in and gives money, presumably, to an Ohio campaign?
Well, I think that there is. Actually, you know, if we take the bigger picture here, the Ohio campaign of last year had a lot of interest sort of outside of, you know, outside of the country. Maybe I can see the point that, you know, there are those who want the political discourse to be within the country, but the boundaries of that, given the realities of campaign finance and how money tends to flow, get very blurred, right? There was lots of complaining as well about moneyed interest that might be American, but outside of the state of Ohio, flowing into the Ohio election and having an impact. And certainly part of the reality here is that this is on both sides. This is part of the reality of political discourse in the United States, is that high profile issues like abortion and marijuana and redistricting get a lot of attention and get a lot of support. In fact, this sort of feeds into the realities of partisan politics, right? Because both sides run on these issues. And so drawing hard and fast lines might be rhetorically powerful for partisans. And yet at the same time, the reality of the enforcement of campaign finance is that to the extent that there is money outside of the state of Ohio, nationally or internationally, coming in, it tends to be arm's length. And so
you can't prove
the question gets blurry as to what is improper influence here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how you can stop it. You're the attorney and I've studied this, but I don't see how you can stop it given the Citizens United case, where you can give anonymously unlimited amounts to campaigns that are, quote, you know, not affiliated with the campaign. I mean, I just don't see how we can stop this unless they change that law, which has been ruled constitutional by the Supreme
Right.
Court.
And that's precisely the point, right? That, you know, it goes all the way back to the beginning of modern American campaign finance law, Buckley v. Leo, which was a decision in the mid-70s that came after all of the problems with Richard Nixon and all of the problems around corruption and its appearance. And the court very importantly said, in effect, money equals speech. And so to limit groups, no matter where on the political spectrum they might be located, no matter what issues they might be advocating for, to limit their speech without a constitutionally valid reason, like express corruption, that you're running in constitutionally dicey waters there.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of the problem here is that this bill, with its provisions around how these bans on foreign money can be enforced, the powers of the attorney granted to the attorney general in this regard, you know, it certainly raises a lot of these questions.
Yeah.
Now,
speaking of the attorney general's role in this new law, under the old law, still in effect until this one goes into effect, the bipartisan Ohio Elections Commission regulates state campaign finance laws. This new law allows the attorney general to prosecute foreign money violations. What is your reaction to that? Is that the proper role for the attorney general?
Well, I'm always concerned in any place where regulating the law of democracy becomes a criminal issue. I think that the traditional approach of letting independent regulatory commissions administer regulatory law seems to make a lot more sense than making the attorney general responsible for this law. I think that this sort of law is very complex. The way this works is, in a sense, remains to be seen. So violations of this, which can lead to initial misdemeanors and then felonies, become a very harsh penalty for what could end up being a problem with paperwork, mm-hmm. right? And I think there's this larger trend around making criminal enforcement a default for hot button political issues, because we also see this in regards to voting in states where someone might have a record of a criminal conviction or other prosecution of voter fraud. You know, to me, this looks like a part of a larger trend of let's prosecute in a space where it ordinarily is just regulation. And that is a concerning trend because I think it chills participation in the process.
And it's also prosecuted by a partisan person, one person, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican in the attorney general position. It's a partisan position where a commission tends to be at least
bipartisan
diffuse.
Or nonpartisan.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking even more that the day-to-day administration of these laws in the ordinary case are done by folks who have deep regulatory knowledge, but no partisan interest or even interest of the prosecutor, right? Prosecutors tend to make their bones by convictions, right? So they may look for problems which are just innocent mistakes. And certainly in other contexts, in terms of the right to participate in elections, I've seen a lot of prosecutions of late under the guise of voter fraud or, like I said, which might have been overreaction. So this blend of partisanship and prosecutorial approaches might end up being more of a problem than what the legislature bargained for.
Now, supporters of this move say the Ohio Elections Commission doesn't have sharp enough teeth. The process takes a while, it's a minor penalty, and campaigns can ignore it and, you know, say, oh, sorry, our bad, we won't do it again. What's your reaction to that?
I mean, sharper teeth implies that there should be big bites taken out of people who break the law. And so it begs the premise of why does this need to be a criminal prosecution, right? I think that the reality of campaigning is that the errors tend to be relatively small, be relatively impactful. And under the modern campaign finance regime, from that case of Buckley v. Valeo on forward, the bigger value here is disclosure. If I know that this is happening, notwithstanding the fee, though some or the penalty, I should say, though some might call it minor, though some might call it not enough, it is enough that it is on the record and the public knows that the money for this speech came from a problematic source. So it's not just, oh, they had to pay a fine. We know that there are people speaking in our elections who should not be speaking.
Yeah, oftentimes,
directly
though,
or indirectly. And that in and of itself accomplishes the core goal of the First Amendment, that the hearer can make a judgment for themselves whether to believe the speaker.
Yeah.
And that disclosure thing, I think, gets lost when we want to turn this into a criminal prosecution. And so this becomes a question of, why do we want to punish people in this way?
Getting to what the governor said, that this is going to end up in court and be challenged, it likely will. What do you think of the chances of that? Will it pass constitutional muster, the bill that was passed last week?
Well, I think that these First Amendment interests ultimately turn into the question of whether this bill is overly chilling people and chilling these interest groups and bringing these statewide campaigns unnecessarily. And I think I am concerned that it does. I am concerned that the specter of criminal prosecution can effectively become a restraint on the parties who are trying to bring these kinds of issue campaigns, the admitted murkiness of campaign finance law, and the fact that contributions might be arm's length from one person's point of view, but it might be interference from another person's point of view, creates a question about whether this becomes vague. And when we want to, you know, under the law, when we want to deal with issues around the First Amendment, we need to make sure that there is a clear structure here and that the punishment fits the offense, but at the same time that we're not unnecessarily chilling speech that shouldn't be chilled.
Yeah.
And if a court sees it that way, then it may well strike this law down.
We shall see. Looking for clearness in the campaign finance world we have here in the United States in the state of Ohio is a never-ending task, and we probably will never get there. Full transparency, yes. Full clear.
We can only wish ourselves good luck.
Yeah.
But I think I will say to end this thought, at least, that the fact that this bill sort of came in the context of a special session and this bill was not the homework of that special session, and that it appears motivated as much about Ohio politics as it does the loopholes that are claimed here. These will raise questions that anyone evaluating this law will take into consideration.
And also, you know, right now, it's the things that have been passed by voters are basically supported by Democrats. But, you know, 10, 15 years from now, the situation could be reversed, and the Republicans are trying to get things passed on the ballot. And the long-term consequences, we'll have to see if this law is upheld. It could reverse the other way.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah. I think that there may well be issues that come a decade from now that might come even sooner. I mean, if we passed an abortion rights amendment, I could imagine that a counter movement might arise. And when the game is flipped, then what seems fair then suddenly becomes unfair. Yeah. And then we're in a different sort of question. Mm-hmm. I mean, the bigger picture here, I think, is that when it comes to the complicated and sometimes murky world of campaign finance, we have to remember the first goal here is we're facilitating people's speech, and that the discourse that's facilitated is the heart of our political process, whether it be partisan or nonpartisan. When we start closing doors, and particularly closing doors unnecessarily, it damages our ability to deliberate with each other. And so these kinds of problems are the ones that the First Amendment is meant to protect against. So it's frustrating. Yeah. Even though it's unmurky, those who love the First Amendment will say that minimum regulation in order to maximize speech and disclosure so that we know what the values are behind that speech is the goal.
Yeah.
Switching it to criminal prosecutions may well interfere with that goal.
Case Western Reserve University Law Professor Atiba Ellis, thanks for joining us on Snell Agoster.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. And we give it to President Joe Biden, who this week issued an executive order limiting the number of migrants seeking asylum at the Mexican border. It is very similar to an order issued by then-President Trump that Biden and Democrats denounced. What's changed? Border crossings continue at a very rapid pace. Congress failed to pass a bipartisan deal to limit such crossings, and polls show immigration continues to hurt Biden's bid for re-election. So, for getting tougher on immigration, 5 months before Election Day, President Biden gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. No show next week. I will be in D.C. discussing said NPR network with folks from NPR. So no Snollygoster next week. As always, we ask you to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast, and just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, and our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.